Hi, my name is Darren. You can email me here if you want to get in touch with me after this presentation, and there's a link to my professional blog. So before I get into what I was planning to say today, I've got this quote here from Thomas Kuhn. During revolutions, scientists see new and different things when looking at familiar instruments in places they have looked before. So take a look at this instrument, and then we'll talk about what it has to do with education. Start a presentation about innovation in education by showing you a fellow playing the guitar. When I saw that video for the first time, it occurred to me, I wondered to myself, how did this fellow learn how to play the guitar? What was his teacher like? What was his class like? When he had a teacher who sat down with him and said, here's how you play the guitar. Because what he's doing with this guitar is he's looking at this familiar instrument in a way that's completely different. He's using that instrument to play the rhythm section, the percussion, the lead, and because of the way he plays it, he has access to many more tones, and he doesn't even really strum the guitar. It's kind of incidental. So he's looked at the guitar, he's taken an old instrument and he's looked at it in a completely different way. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the instruments that I use concretely and pedagogically in the classroom. When I learn about tools like blogs, wikis, podcasts, concretely, what do you do to achieve very specific curricular goals? And I guess the way I think about using those tools is often in the context of an orchestration. I sometimes see myself as a conductor in the way I work with students. Another metaphor I use is a choreographer, and the most powerful one is that of a gardener, which is something I picked up from George. with a gardener, when you plant a new plant, you kind of you tear the whole top off the plant and put it in the ground and put soil over it, water it, so that it'll grow roots and take root strongly. And then you got to step back and let it grow. Then after a little while, some weeds start to grow. So you got to get involved again. You get your hands dirty. You got to get those weeds out, and then you got to step back again. And there's this constant push me pull you that goes on when we're using these sorts of tools in the classroom. So the questions that I ask myself is, what can I do now that I couldn't do before with these tools? And specifically, I often think about linking, tags, and RSS. I'm interested in looking at pedagogies that are replicable. It shouldn't be because I have some special unique talent, which I don't believe is the case. It should be scalable. It should be applicable across grade levels, K to 20, and sustainable. It should be, I'm going to invest time and energy now, but this is not something I can do for the long term. No, I'm looking at real, meaningful, concrete changes in pedagogy. And I can point to several examples, which I've linked to here. I'm not going to discuss all of them, although I will briefly talk about the Flat Classroom Project. These links are here because all of these teachers are currently struggling with notions of scale, of replicability and scalability and sustainability. In the amazing projects that they've done. The Flat Classroom Project, I draw your attention to because I feel that that's a model, that's a project that might just work at the university level as well. A classroom in rural Georgia, in Camilla, Georgia, got together with another class in Dhaka, Bangladesh. The teacher in Bangladesh is Julie Lindsay, and in Camilla, Georgia, it's Vicky Davis. And they had their students read the book by Thomas Friedman, The World is Flat, and the 10 flatteners that Friedman's discussed were assigned to the class. They paired kids up one from one, or sometimes two for two, or two for one from each class, and they had to work together to become experts in how that flattener was having an impact on both the business world, or industry, and in education. And they built a wiki, and the kids shared their learning there. They also decided to reach out to four other teachers from across the world to ask them to be judges, to kind of judge which wiki page was turned out to be the best. So they reached out to Terry Friedman, an educator in the UK, an ICT consultant. They also reached out to Jeff Utick, is a technology teacher in Shanghai, China. Joe McClay teaches English language arts in Melbourne, Australia. And they asked me to participate, and I'm here in Winnipeg. Fascinating project. You should investigate that, because I think that you already have the tools and connections to make a project like that really work at the university level. You don't need blogs to get connected with an international community, because as university professors, you're already working with an international community. So match a kid up in your class. I mean, think of your U1 students. That same U1 course is being taught, maybe using the same textbook, as a teacher in another city or another country. And pair up your students and watch the engagement take place. I think that that kind of model really has the potential to be replicable, scalable, and sustainable at the university level. But that's an idea for you. So I want to talk now about concretely, what am I doing, and why do I start off with this guitar player? Well, I'm going to use that as a metaphor for how I use these tools in the classroom. My guitar is a blog, and that's my instrument. Now, when I asked in session today how many people were familiar with what a blog was, it was about half, maybe a little bit less. So very quickly, a blog is, some people call it an online journal or an online diary, where when you write something, you publish it. It's about as hard as it is to send an email. And the newest things at the top and the oldest things at the bottom. And in essence, that's pretty much how people think of a blog. But I look at it in a very different way. In the same way that young man might look at that guitar differently, I think a blog brings a whole suite of potential to what we can do with what we can do pedagogically speaking in the classroom. So my AP Calculus class was with me today, and I want to show you their blog. This is what their blog looks like. So it has the title at the top. Down the right-hand side, you see the list of collaborators or contributors. There's myself at the top. Lonnie is not a student in my class. I'll come back to that a little later. Lonnie is a retired teacher and currently a curriculum developer in Ohio. and she's a mentor for my classes, and I'll talk about that a little more later. So on the left, you'll see the scribe post. I'm going to talk a little bit about what's happening in the right-hand side, in the sidebar of the blog. There's a search feature there. There's a map. This map, all those little red dots, each red dot represents another place in the world that visited our class. And very quickly, if you click on the map, it blows up, and you can see what the map looks like, and where this blog has been hit. And they've been hit from pretty much every continent on the planet. Most of the USA and southern Canada has been pretty much obliterated because they've been hit so many times. Parts of Europe have been completely obliterated with these red dots, because those are places that come from which people come to visit our class blog and perhaps even learn from. So the sense of audience is really important. I don't have time to get into discussion of everything. I'm going to try to keep this to 15 minutes, but I'll probably run over time because I don't have to share the stage with George and Clarence this time around. Then you see our math photo gallery. This is an assignment that I had my kids do, taught them a little bit about what Flickr was. Everybody got an account, and we're going to look at that assignment later. There's a permanent list of links here on the blog. Scribe list is related to the mechanics of how I use scribe posts, which I'll talk about in a second. If you notice on the left, we still have that long post going on, and that's a scribe post. That's a student reporting about what they learned in class that day, and it's going on for quite some time. Labels is one way to organize information in a blog. There are tags that get picked up by Technorati, which is a search engine specific for blogs, technorati.com. You can see all the posts that have been published in January, a total of 25 of them, and 170 posts were published in total in 2006. The next thing down the sidebar is something called the chat box. In this box, students can chat with each other, leave messages to each other. You can see someone was excited that we were going on a field trip to come here today. Before that, they're discussing about a test that they had recently. A student has a problem editing the blog, and a couple of students have that problem, and they're getting help from each other. They use the chat box to interact and connect with each other outside of class and get help. And it preserves these comments asynchronously, so you can see comments going back to the 26th is today, but going back to the 16th, the 12th of January and earlier. If we scroll down a little bit more, you're going to see right in here, feed window to other math blog. This is an AP calculus class in La Canada, Flint Ridge, California. The teacher there is Mr. French, and these are the most recent publications that coming out of that blog. So this is a little window into what that class is learning, which my students can access with the click of a button. Scrolling down a little farther, we still have that long scribe post on the left-hand side, and we're just finally coming to the end of it. And there's a scribe post from the day before. Next we have, in the right-hand side, we have the delicious box. And in here you'll see that there's a unique tag that I choose for my course. Tag is, if you're familiar with social bookmarking, Delicious is a social bookmarking site, and instead of a taxonomy, they call it a folksonomy, a categorization by the people for the people, where you basically choose any descriptive word or text, which we call a tag, and you label whatever it is that you're saving in this online space. Instead of your computer, it goes into this online space, and then it's completely accessible for anybody else to access online. Well, through the magic of RSS, my students share those websites that are helpful to them in their learning here, and they end up both in the online bucket, which is the first link in the Delicious box, as well as these are the 10 most recent tags or recent sites that students have tagged that they found helpful in their learning. There's also stuff here like to photos, which was part of an assignment that they had. So this is also a way to broadcast information to the class, and I've done that too in the past, and hopefully I'll have time to talk about that some more later. So that's essentially, those are the pieces, parts of the blog. There's a lot more going on here than just the blog. And so when I say that the blog is my instrument, my pedagogical improvisation, this is my tool. And the fact that students publish stuff and it gets broadcast out to the world leads to the sense of audience that you can see made real by the visitor map. And that's an important part. of being successful. It's that sense of audience, and in particular, capturing the participation of people maybe outside your classroom. So my favorite riff on my instrument on the blog is something that I call Scribe Post. And essentially the assignment is each student is told that they have to write a summary of what they're learning each day in the classroom. Now, my classes don't have textbooks. We don't, now that's, I guess, a bit of an issue, and the textbooks exist, but I choose not to use textbooks. The students in my classes are not required to read the textbook. They are required to write the textbook, and that's what these scribe posts are. Each day, this one student is responsible to write a summary of what they learned in class that day. They're told that that's their page in the textbook. It should have enough detail and information so that someone who missed class was away can catch up and stay on top of what they were learning that day. And they should remember they have a global audience and they want to look good. So some questions they should ask themselves is this good enough for the textbook? Is this, would a graphic image help, maybe some color? What's going to be helpful? And at the beginning of the semester, those scribe posts start off basically as just text. But as the semester moves on, the kids start using color in a meaningful way. Here's a student who is now writing by hand their scribe post, and then they take a digital picture of it. It looks like a scan of the text of what they learned that day in class, which was integration by parts, if there's any calculus teachers watching this. And they go through the steps, and not just graphic images, but you see they're using color in a meaningful way. Headings, subheadings, more images. If you click on the image zooms in and you can get a close-up view of what the student was writing there. So that's what the scribe post is. When each student ends their scribe post by choosing the next student who will be the scribe for the next day. So it's entirely automated. I don't really have very little to do with the scribe post. Exceptional student work is then publicized in something called the Scribe Post Hall of Fame, which is a place that we collect the finest work done by all the students in all my classes, and not just my classes, but other people's classes as well. So if we scroll down here for a little bit, you'll see that most of the entries are me, and then we decide a little later on that to get into the Hall of Fame, you've got to be voted in by your classmates. Here's a couple of other teachers that are using the Scribe Post Hall of Fame. They also have scribe posts, and we also use this as a motivational tool to get our students to push themselves to ever more and more excellent work. At the beginning of the semester, those usually start out as just a little bit of text, and then the students begin to outdo themselves. They kind of challenge each other and push each other forward, and they realize that the writing that they're doing in these scribe posts is of value not just to them as individuals, but also to their classmates. That they're not writing for me, they're writing for their classmates, and they're writing for the audience that's made real to them by their visitor map. I could talk about scribe posts literally for hours. There's a lot more to the pedagogy behind that, but that's just a little taste. The next thing I've got here is jamming. So jamming on the guitar, jamming on my instrument, all the little things that I do. I talked briefly about chat boxes. Chat boxes is that little asynchronous chat that the students can have. They can get help from each other. They can leave messages to each other. Sometimes they leave messages to me and I'll pop in with a comment. And anybody else in the world can participate in that. Feed windows, I think, is also important for creating a sense of audience, but also a sense of community. Because using feed windows, which you saw, we had that window on the AP Calculus blog that went out to that classroom in Southern California, right here, that there's other people learning the same stuff. So students in my class share their learning, and students in other classes share their learning. And as more and more schools and classes come online, sharing learning in this way, and this, I talked about when I think about pedagogy, that I want it to be replicable and scalable and sustainable. Well, right now the idea of scribe posts has been picked up by classrooms from that I'm aware of from grade 5 through university. There's a grade 7-8 class that I learned about in Scotland that has scribes going on in their math classes. And Mr. French in California uses scribes. There's an English teacher in Colorado who's using scribes in her grade 10 English language arts class, think it's a world literature class. There's another teacher here in Manitoba, Ryan McSimchuk, who teaches applied math, and all of his applied classes also have scribe posts, and they're building on the pedagogy that that I've developed here. And this link, if you click on scribe posts, what that will do is it'll take you to my personal blog, and I've written an article that goes through what a scribe post is in detail and how to incorporate that into your teaching. So I won't discuss it here. You can come back and read this article at your leisure. Moving on to jamming, new technologies give rise to new pedagogies. So when I'm thinking about linking and RSS and tagging, what can I do that I couldn't do before? It occurred to me that with Flickr, Flickr has the capability to upload pictures to the web, and then those pictures can be viewed by anyone. You can tag those pictures, label them in any way you like. So we create a unique course tag, and students take pictures, and they're assigned to a theme. This is an example of when students were assigned the theme of trigonometry. And so this young lady takes a picture of her curtain. And where's the trigonometry in this picture? Well, using the hotspots, which is a feature of Flickr, it's built right into the interface. You don't have to do anything extra. And all of this stuff is free. If you move the cursor over the picture, these hotspots appear. And if you move over any of those particular hotspots, some text pops up, which is the student entered this. She selected that rectangle of space, and if you look very carefully, you'll see there's a tangent function that the girl saw here. She sees that this one represents the x-axis for her tangent function. This, if you stretch out the curtain a little bit, it makes a triangle, which is also part of trigonometry. She sees a semicircle here. Down here, she sees a sine wave, and if you shift it, a cosine wave. She sees another semicircle, and she talks about angles and radians and degrees. And so she finds math in the world around her in a place that she never thought she would see it before. This was my idea of students creating unique sorts of mind maps. And using Flickr, they're able to create these images and create these hotspots. And by creating a unique tag, which for this course is PC40SF06, that's their also part of their blog address. So that's unique. I don't think there's anyone else in the world using that particular combination of letters and numbers. Students label their work in this way. They label both with the course tag and the assignment tag. And so I just come into Flickr and I search for both the course tag and assignment tag, and only my student stuff comes up. So marking's a breeze. I use Google Spreadsheets to do the marking. I have a spreadsheet that I mark this stuff on the fly. One tab has Google Spreadsheets open, one tag has the picture open. And my students actually developed a rubric for this assignment, and we did that on Google Docs collaboratively. And again, you'll find information about that on my blog. There's another student who, in a grade 11 class, who had the assignment of quadratic functions. And this is a very busy picture, but there's an awful lot of content packed into this picture about quadratic functions, and it's just simply breathtaking. And I know I'm flipping over this much too fastly for you to read now, but the links will be here in the wiki, and you can come back and take a look at these things anytime you like. They have a different course tag and assignment tag. And again, I just go into Flickr and search for those tags, and all the students' work comes right up. So, going back to our presentation. Again, I'm just trying to share with you some pedagogical ideas of what I do. Now, myself and Chris Harbeck, who is a grade 8 math teacher at one of the feeder schools for my school, we decided that we would put together this wiki called Student Blog Wiki Tools. You're welcome to use this too if you like, studentblogwikitools.wikispaces.com. And all we're doing here is putting a list of links to tools, free online tools that kids could use if they wish for anything at all. And Chris and I, just as we come across stuff that we think might be of value to students, we add it in here. So there's blogging tools if kids want to create a blog, wiki tools, audio tools, video tools, image tools, Flickr is one of them, Gliffy is another. You got to check that one out if you don't know what it is. Slideshow tools, and it was interesting. The slideshow tools, one of the students in my grade 11 class picked up on the idea of these slideshow tools. And she decided that for something that they were learning in geometry, they had to do a construction and a little investigation. And she decided that what she would do is she'd put her images into a little slideshow. So if you look down here, this is a bubble share slideshow. This is the first student to ever do this. No one had ever done this bubble share slideshow in any of the classes of mine before. And so it now runs through the slides as she kind of explains in the text around it what are the steps involved in this particular theorem, which involves the angles between a tangent and a chord and a related inscribed angle. So she's got more than one of these slideshows on the blog, and when she was writing her scribe post, she enriched it by including these slideshows. Well, other students didn't want to be outdone, and now it's become a given that students will create a slideshow anytime it's appropriate to show changing images to express what they're doing. So you give students the tools and let them run with it. And sometimes that's a little scary. It's an issue of control, but let the students go and let them do a little jamming and see what happens. Now this business about this next link, I'm going to be very brief, and then I have another little video I want to share with you. Developing expert voices. I want to share with you the link to this. This is one of my students. I mentioned before about Lonnie. Lonnie Ritter-Hall is a mentor on my class blogs, which means that she comes in and she leaves positive comments to the students, encouraging them in their learning. And over the holiday, I've made contact with, I got in touch with another person, Emina Abilagovic, is a professor of mathematics at the University of Michigan. And she's also agreed to be a mentor to my students. And one of my students in my grade 12 pre-calculus class writes this post on, they were learning about geometric sequences. And she's explaining how to solve a problem in several different ways. So Emina signs her posts E, and she writes to Joanne, and she says, I was hoping there was a favor, there was a problem with the links, and Joanne goes in and she fixes it. Thanks so much for pointing it out. And then E comes back and she says, I wasn't sure that I understood the way you were solving that problem. I thought this, I thought the other, but in the end, I think this is what you were doing. Did I get that right? Now, that's a professor of mathematics. My student Joanne knows that Amina is a professor of mathematics at university. Now, she will never talk to me. She would never write me a comment the way she wrote this comment to Amina. Now, I don't think this is rude, but here you have a professor of mathematics asking my student, did I get that right? And my student writes, hi, E, yeah, that's correct. The tone and tenor of that reply really struck me, because it was almost as though my student had now become an expert. And she was replying and saying, yes, that's right. You wanted to know the answer to your question? Well, that's right, you've got it correct. It's almost as though she was talking to a student. Now, I don't think that was going through Joanne's head, but that sense of expertise, that sense of I am confident and knowledgeable in this area, is something that I've really only seen develop fully in a blog. It's not something that's common across a classroom. Before, students had a place to explore their voice and explore their learning and share that learning publicly in the way that they do with a blog. So the purpose of me talking about my favorite riff and all the little jamming that I do, and I haven't touched on anything and I've really only scratched the surface, is to just to give you some ideas and plant some seeds about how you might incorporate pedagogically some of these tools into your classes. Now, with the kind of music that that young man was making with the guitar, he creates a certain ambience, and he's able to do that because he looks at the instrument in a very different way. Well, the ambience of what we're doing in the classroom nowadays is affected by some changes that are happening in the world. And this is a presentation I'm about to show you that was put together by Carl Fish. Carl is a teacher in Colorado, and he leads up an ongoing professional development project with the teachers in his school, Arapaho High School. And he put together this presentation, which is called Did You Know? It's part of his trilogy, and I'll let you follow the links that are here on the wiki to find out about the others. On the first day of class, he put a very liberal copyright on it, and he gave me permission to kind of remix the slides, which I did, and I took out any mention of Carl's school, put in a mention of my own school, put in a little bit of Canadian content as well, because that wasn't there before, and I remixed it into my version of the Carl's Did You Know presentation. That's 99% still Carl's stuff. I showed this. I only saw my class in about 30 minutes at the beginning of the year, my first day of class. And that same day, the first day of class that I saw my students, my daughter, my youngest daughter, Amelia, she started grade one. This stuff's really personal for me. This stuff about the kind of impact that this can have on education. One day my daughter may be sitting in your class. And I have a passionate concern for my daughter's education, not just my daughter, but my son. But she started grade one this year. Keep that in mind, because Amelia will come up in the course of this presentation. It's a little less than 8 minutes long. Stick with it, and we'll talk after. that's Carl's presentation. Carl also has a young daughter who's starting grade one, who started grade one this year. That's the ambience. That's the environment within which we are educating children. I don't know if you caught it, but the rate at which knowledge is doubling every 2 years, technical knowledge is doubling right now. But by 2010, which is only about, is only 3 years away now, by 2010 they're expecting that to be doubling every 72 hours. That's every 3 days. So when you teach in your classroom, and what you're teaching, what your focus is on content, you have to start asking yourself that if the content is changing and growing at such a rapid pace, should the object of learning, should the object of what we're teaching in the classroom be strictly the content? I'm not saying we should do away with content. That's our bread and butter. That's what we do. But the content, teaching the content, should be a vehicle, I think, in teaching kids how to learn. And I posed this question to my students. This was posted to all their class weblogs, and you can go back and look on any of their blogs. Go back into the September archive and look at the very first post where the students, this video is published there as well, and the students reply to the question, what shift is happening? And I have this link here at the bottom. Have you read Thomas Kuhn? Shift happens. It's the paradigm shift. It's the way we do what we do and the atmosphere within which we do what we do is undergoing such dramatic and powerful changes that require from us as educators a powerful and dramatic response. I leave it to you and your creativity to come up with an answer to the question of how you're going to address the many varied, multifaceted literacies that your students and your children are going to need in the world that's just around the corner. Lastly, there's a message for Carl Fesch from Carl. Carl has a message for all of us. He posted his New Year's resolution on his blog, and he found a neat little tool that there's a message held on the surface of the earth, and using Google Earth, Carl sent a message out to everyone who's thinking in the context of using these tools to make deep, meaningful changes in children's lives. So you see all these little pins popping up all over the world, and the page is loading. And I'm just going to give that a couple more seconds. And then let's have a look at the message Carl has for us, because this is what we're capable of doing as educators, I believe. Thanks for listening, and feel free to leave your comments here at the bottom of this post.